trees and other times when the garden is going to be planted, cover crops and not disturbing the ground at all. Water is kind of in the same category, so I'm going to use it. The visual impact, I find vexing. I find it totally difficult to understand how a couple of little greenhouses 800 feet away from Bob Club Drive become a significant part of the landscape. I did a little analysis.
It's about 18 at the Capitol Book Cafe. Checking in on Susie Butt.
The creep, Mr. Creep, the big guy, clearly a nice boy, a smooth boy, and you don't have to be for all your desires of those bad trashy girls that you would never give the time of day to in the rest of your middle class life. Then we have Hillary, this first lady, who despite all her poise and fervent feminism, is clearly living her power through her man, you know, no matter what the cost. Then we have a young woman who apparently thinks that the height of prestige in one's life is to be providing fellatio services to the president. After all these benefits, you see a young woman who doesn't imagine being the president, but rather growing the president. And then we have Penn Star. Who thinks that everybody should be living their life according to some misinterpretation of the scripture. It's so miserable. It's so depressing. This is what we have as our sexual role models. Isn't that wonderful? In that way, I guess I kind of almost feel like a light wonder. Like, whatever happened to morality? Whatever, in the neutral sense of the word, whatever happened to having some dignity or integrity about anything? Very depresso, and I wish, my crystal ball is just cracking because I fail to see people in the political side of public life who make me proud. They make me ashamed. They make me feel like, ugh, being an American is just a big red embarrassment.
Those are the only dollars available for sex education now are abstinence. I really appreciate you wanting to be a groovy aunt. I know it makes a really big difference to have a groovy aunt in your life. My groovy aunt just passed away, and I was talking to one of my cousins, and he said, yeah, I'll never forget when Aunt Molly, she took me into the city, into San Francisco from the East Bay, and she bought me a pair of green velvet bell bottoms. And then we went to see Space Odyssey 2001, and then she took me to Fillmore, and I saw Santana and Janis Joplin. I was like, Aunt Molly was so cool!
His parents would have just had a fit.
Any of those things. So it's very important to have groovy adults that you can relate to
if your parents are kind of hard. And in some ways, it doesn't matter what you do, just being a good listener. And also, now you say, I don't feel really wild and frisky myself. Well, I think what young people see the adults doing in their lives is a much more powerful message than any particular, book or mission statement that you make to them. It's really important that they see you having some imagination and humor and pleasure in your sexual thoughts and comments about things. It makes a huge difference. And
As far as books, now, you know, I'd love to know myself. I mean, I don't have my daughter's old enough yet, and I'm just wondering, what is there? Trying to look at things that I read when I was that age.
Well, see,
of course, what I was interested in was finding, like, the filthiest adult books I could. Valley of the Dolls, the opening to The Godfather. I mean, everything was like that, you would sort of step around. Just, you know, turn-on material. And even though the last thing I would want to do would be to have a long talk with my mother about it, on the other hand, I mean, which is just absurd. We never really discussed something like that. I do have a very nonchalant attitude about the erotic material in my house. And if my daughter, like right now, in fact, she's watching, she'd be in bed by now, but she was watching a Disney film called Tom and Huck, you know, like the Tom and Huck, and she thinks it is so sexy. She's just like moving herself into a frenzy watching this movie. I don't know what it is. But Jonathan Taylor!
Thomas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is so cute.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
She's 7.
Mm-hmm. But, you know,
I'm glad that she just, like, tells me that, you know. Now, of course, I don't say anything condemning about it or whatever. But, see, she thought the fox and the hound was really sexy. She thought the fox was sexy. This is an animated cartoon. You never know. What's my gem? Excuse me, what about it? All of you know this whole backwards and forwards. It's new to me. This is what you got to get your head straight about. What they're going to get in school has to do with pregnancy prevention and disease prevention. All the other big issues, privacy, nudity, masturbation, fantasy, sexual preference, nobody's going to say anything about that. So, you know, if you can't find the kid materials, get the adult materials. Don't make a big deal out of it, but, you know, have it in your house. Be open to talking about it. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do when I get closer to this with my own daughter. I feel so militant right now. I mean, I just feel like running into all those junior high school classrooms and saying, "Everyone have sex!" No, which is not the right thing to do. But I mean, I just feel so bad that everything is so—it's so preachy and it's so false. And actually, it reminds me of. When I was in 7th grade, we got the first round of supposedly hip drug prevention. And it was so stupid. And they showed this film where somebody smokes a marijuana cigarette, and then the next day they're a heroin addict. And that's what they're doing with this AIDS prevention education. It's really disturbing. And they play on people's fears about being virgins and being inexperienced to begin with. You're already terrified, you know, about it. You feel like you're the ugliest person in the world, number one, that nobody will ever want you, that you'll make a fool out of yourself, that you don't know how to kiss anybody, that you don't know how to do it. You know, like everybody, it's just, you feel like there's this giant spotlight on you, and then somebody comes along and says, sex equals death. You know, it's just too much. It's too much. And everyone is so, like, I see more kind of like slut baiting going on in junior high and high school than I've ever seen before, and it makes me sick. Really makes me sick. And people being afraid to even show little simple acts of affection because they don't want to be, you know, turned into the, you know, the high school hooker of the week or, you know, whatever everybody's gossiping about. It's really hard. So, I don't know, just good company. I guess that's the answer. Yeah.
I have suggestions for a good book for adolescents.
Oh, yes, please.
Changing bodies, changing lives. That's why ourselves are...
Changing bodies, changing lives.
It's the same format. It's a wonderful book.
Oh, that's good to hear. Yeah.
There's also a television show on cable late night, and I think it's made
Yeah, it's on MTV.
I got encouraged by some of my students to listen to that.
Yeah.
And they said it used to be really good. It's gone downhill. When I watched it, I'm like, well, this is pretty downhill, all right. There's a lot of making fun of people and inaccurate information and just sort of making somebody the boot of a sexual joke, which I was like, oh yeah, that's real grown up, that's so mature. So I was let down. I hear that they have this sort of glorious past, and I've had some people tell me that, you know, they realized that they were gay listening to Love Line, and it was so helpful to them, or they realized something or other. But the current incarnation on MTV was too MTV for me. It was all appearances and not enough vulnerability or honesty. Yeah, back there.
Yeah, question.
Two.
You mentioned preteenness and phoniness. Being that we're in Santa Cruz, if you had a chance to talk to the Methodist morality committee, the incarnation of Ann Simonton, or do you think anyone could talk sense to them?
And question number two.
You caught me off guard by yourself. Question number two. Amongst the going on in Washington, we have this woman, Finley, who's got a case against the NEA,
correct,
because Jesse Helms and his bill, the Standards and Decency Act, is going to legislate morality of institutions like universities to, you know, and that could hurt people from getting published and stuff like that. The other thing that's going on is we've got Lolita, will not be shown in this country. You've got the latest incarnation of the 1930s Catholic Decency in the guise of Michael Medved, who says that Hollywood won't show because it's now recognized that the public just doesn't like movies that are explicitly sexual.
Unless it's Wild Things, which is playing next door.
And then he went on to say, as Kruby says, if you look, no Hollywood movie who's come out on the cutting edge with sexual topics has made it in the box office. I guess he doesn't think In and Out or Chasing Amy or something like that was a success. But what do you think about Michael Medved and this whole quasi-fascist moral
Titanic mentality. He was asking two questions. One, you know, how do I respond to the Stalinist remnants of Santa Cruz's political past? And also, who do I think of the conservative trends in Hollywood and their treatment of sexuality, particularly sexuality in adolescence? Well, I lived in Santa Cruz many years ago, 79 to 81. I went to school here. And it really was, I experienced this sort of repression of the politically correct thought police in many different places and ways, and it actually fueled my rebellion. I have to thank those people for turning me into the feminist pornographer I am today. And then coming back all these years later, I mean, look at all of you. Everybody came out here so friendly, so nice. I don't feel that kind of climate of everyone here agrees that this is wrong. That just doesn't happen. Nowadays, if somebody wants to do an art show in Santa Cruz, no matter how controversial it is, there is definitely going to be a healthy debate about it. There isn't going to be this sense that, well, anyone who disagrees couldn't possibly be a human being. I mean, that is not going to happen anymore. It just, and there's all kinds of wonderful erotic pioneers and artists in this community, and I think we've found each other and found an audience, and things are pretty darn good compared to the climate that used to be here. So I don't mean to sound like Rebecca Sunnybrook Farm, but I'm a happy camper. I live here. If it was miserable, I wouldn't be here. And then as far as Hollywood is concerned, I don't know what to make of those people. There's this fetishization of youthful sexuality right now where it's like so forbidden, which is why this movie that's playing next door is so interesting to me. It's clearly about teenagers having affairs with a high school teacher in some sort of prostitution ring. I mean, how much more sordid can you get? And yet Lolita, which is, based on this classic work And which apparently, I haven't seen it, but it's supposed to be, you know, quite classically rendered by Adrian Lyne, who would thank Mr. Flashdance. Anyway, everyone knows it's hypocritical, and it's... I expect so little of them. I mean, I'm more floored when I see something I think is great. I'm more amazed when, I had the opportunity to do the sexual choreography for Ruby Bound, and I got to, have my little part in that. And that was fantastic for me to work on that movie and see it released in more or less its intended form. And so I get very excited about what's happening in independent film and the kind of the decline of studios in a way. Mm-hmm. And you didn't really notice that at the Oscars, but when you think of all the movies you watched last year, just think of how many of them had nothing to do with what was going on at the Oscar ceremonies. And there's so many interesting things being said about sexuality. Well, when I saw Chasing Amy, I was floored. I mean, some of that dialogue was right out of my early columns for On Our Backs. I couldn't get over it. So I like seeing what people are up to. I'm not looking towards Medved or any of those people to lead the way. They never lead the way. They suck off the new energy like parasites. And that's what one can expect of them. One more, yeah.
What kind of consulting did you do for
that? What kind of consulting did
I do? What did I actually do?
Who did I actually touch? What happened was I got a script from these guys I'd never heard of before, and they said, "We're your biggest fans, and we're making a movie, and you're writing about lesbian life, this kind of life that we want to show in our film, and we're wondering if you would be a cameo in it. And here's the script, you'll see, you're a bar girl." Well, I read the script, and it was so good. I mean, I learned a lot about writing, just reading the thing. In terms of creating suspense. I mean, I was screaming with anticipation, just reading, black words on white paper. And the film is very faithful to that script in terms of dialogue. However, I noticed that, it's about this British family couple that try to outwit the mob. And when they meet each other, and there's that sort of moment where, they're going to have a big clinch, and they're going to be alone, and they're going to make love now, there was no description of what they did. Nothing, just moved to the next scene. So I said, I hope you don't think I'm presumptuous, but I have just been incredibly humiliated and embarrassed by the things that get called lesbian sex in Hollywood movies, and I'd be really, I don't ever want to have anything to do with something embarrassing like that. Could I perhaps be your lesbian sex consultant? And they just said, yeah, that'd be great. So I said, okay, I have lots of ideas. And I got out my book, Nothing But the Girl. Do you have that here? It's my big hardcover photo book. And do you have it here? If you do, I want to show it to you. Because I sent them the cover photograph in that book. And I said, this is Corky, your lead character. This is who she is. Just look at this picture, and you have all the information you need to know. And believe me, this photograph was as inspiring to them as it was to me, and then later to Gina Gershon, who played the character. And I sent them some film clips. I said, I have an idea about what you could do for the sex scene. It doesn't need to be X-rated, but you'll be able to imply everything you need to. And we went back and forth, and they'd call me back and read me, the storyboards and how it was looking so far. It went back and forth in that regard. I suppose some of the main things I said was that you wanted to, the camera needed to objectify the women's hands, that the hands were basically lesbian cock, and that you had to, every time the camera settled on those hands, you should be going, oh my goodness, you should just feel like, ooh la la, it should be very sexy. I said the nature of the story, the kind of women they are, the butch femme couple, and the fact that it's all about trust. Remember how they say this is all about trust. You don't want it to be one of those soft focus oral sex scenes. That wouldn't be the right thing. You want there to be penetration. It's about getting inside, and so that is what you want to imply. So it was like, I could see it all in my mind. What was so incredible was that it looked like how I imagined it.
So was that kind of the reason why you didn't want to focus, or why you didn't suggest that you had a
little
sex scene?
Yeah, I mean,
I was curious, but I was like,
Oh, I was slightly disappointed, but...
One is never enough. But after all, there was this other plot going on. You see, there was only a limited number of minutes. You know, what can I say? I'm waiting for another phone call, perhaps? I could do a great oral sex scene. I have great ideas for oral sex, but no one has called yet. I thought this particular thing that they did suited the way the story was unfolding. And one thing I really learned in the course is that when people see actors and actresses who seem to be doing this incredible performance, you tend to credit them with how wonderful it was. And I would say Jennifer and Gina were indeed excellent at carrying out these very minute instructions. But it really, you know, if Larry and Andy Wachowski had been up there rolling around on a sheet, everyone would have run out of the theater because they're not particularly attractive, you know, in the way that Gina and Jennifer were so glamorous. But it really was them and me in terms of thinking what it was going to look like and what kind of characters they should have, and then they really brought it to life. They were great. So, I think I should get into meeting some of you personally. Certainly, if you'd like to have your book autographed, then please come on up, or if you'd just like to say hello. And then I'm going to go to bed.
Copies of Sexual State of the Union, some of other
first, perhaps it was April Fool's Day at the Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
Well, we all showed up, so
we're talking
kind of fools we are.
To two board members here, Becky Johnson and Laura Tucker. Well, who wants to start first and tell us what happened at this special meeting?
Becky first. Gabriel has something to say.
Well, we had a
professional mediator at the meeting from, did you catch where that was from?
Where he was from?
Yeah, just Alameda or something like that. Not from
Packard the... Packard Foundation.
No, he's being paid. His services were being paid for by a grant from the Packard Foundation. Actually, two grants. One, a $10,000 grant and another $35,000 grant. So that's
Pretty well spent.
$45,000 to merge is kind of like the price tag for this merger, which may or may not happen.
I don't understand that. Where's all the money going to? How come it costs so much?
There's lots of legal paperwork and entanglements, and there's a lot of suspicion from both HCRC over CCH finances, and CCH has a lot of suspicion over HCRC finances. One of the comments made at the meeting that they didn't really have a lot of confidence when they just read last year in the paper that the HCRC was going to close because due to lack of funding. So it doesn't really give me a lot of confidence in merging with an organization.
Like, we have a lot of room to talk.
Well, yeah, I'd say CCH has also been in precarious financial shape on and off. And we're actually in probably one of the better positions we've been in for quite a while financially.
Aren't you under a lawsuit by former Community House Director Frank Pusilik?
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Is that a secret matter?
Oh, no, I was just saying, though, that, you know, if HCRC, that's probably something you wouldn't want to mention to HCRC right about.
I'll call them up. Go ahead.
One of the concerns I raised at the meeting was that I'm concerned that HCRC has not held open board meetings in the past.
Good for you, Becky. They've
sort of claimed that they have, but when we've inquired about when and where the board meetings were, we were basically shut down, and myself and other individuals I know as well have made that attempt, and several of the members of CCH also expressed that would be really a non-negotiating point, would be that the meetings be open to the public.
Well, yeah. CCH, we thank you. I was wondering if that exception was
except for you, Robert. Yes.
So what was the react? Was Karen Gillette at this meeting?
No.
No. Carol Shannon was there. She's the only staff member. It was exclusively board members of CCH, the mediator, and a few people from the Holmes Garden Project Advisory Board were there.
Because I was supposed to, they didn't recognize.
Yeah, they were not CCH members, but it was primarily a CCH meeting, with this paid facilitator who was quite good. I don't know if he's being paid, but he was quite good.
You had a nice, expensive suit on too.
What was the purpose of the meeting?
The purpose of the meeting was to determine if we could, at the end of the meeting, come to some sort of consensus about whether we were going to move forward on the merger, whether we were going to back off the merger, or whether we were going to make this merger conditional. And I think that was the third choice that was voted in by the board.
If all of our concerns are met, then we would be happy to see this merger happen.
And what are those concerns, Laura Tucker?
Are we able to talk about that?
Oh yeah, sure. I'd say in general terms that we can. There were some what we would consider personnel matters, and that was greatly concerned many of the CCH members. Was apparently it was a condition that the HCRC had made that they would not continue with the merger unless we agreed right off the bat that Karen Gillette would be the executive director. So there was a controversy about whether that should be automatic. There was several people had concerns. And, Karen has, in the number of years she's been the executive director of the Homeless Community Resource Center, has accumulated some baggage, and there are a lot of stories going around, and many people have heard them. And so there was not... I would say not uniform support for Karen Gillette being automatically appointed.
Did CCH vote last meeting to simply restrict the hiring process to Karen Gillette? I guess you guys maybe were on the losing end of that vote, or?
Oh well, Becky didn't show up. Otherwise, it would have been a tie. But
four, right?
Yeah.
Did you vote again on that issue? Or?
We decided actually that it's kind of silly to. They're saying to have Karen be the only applicant when actually what is she applying for? Her job that she already has? That doesn't make any sense. There's two executive directors, one for HCRC and one for CCH, and our executive director is not going to be continuing to work for us anyway after July, and so there's really not a job. There's no, if we were to merge, there wouldn't actually be a job opening. We could decide not to have Karen as the executive director, fire her and hire somebody else, but we're talking about hiring her for the job that she already has.
I thought we were talking about a new position. I thought we were talking about a new position that was above both HCRC and CCH.
That's exactly what we're talking about, kind of a super executive director who would be in charge of both CCH and HCRC projects ultimately.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be like an executive director over two more executive directors, one being Karen and one being Carol.
But it'll be one certainly a person with greater power than currently the executive director has, right? Of either organization.
Only in that we're merging, so they would have, power over more.
They have power over your entire CCH operation, right?
Yeah, exactly, over the ISSP program.
It's a new position in that sense. And did you vote to give that to Karen Gillette without discussion?
The same position given more to do.
The same position when you're controlling a much greater territory. It's a different position, in my view.
Basically, what's happened is that we voiced a lot of concerns. We were encouraged to seek in our own hearts what all of our concerns are, and to write them down and submit them to the three members who are on this from CCH, who are on our merger committee, which is Diane Lowe, Matt Guerrieri, and Catherine Byers.
What happened to Cynthia Matthews, the head of the merger committee that doesn't tell where the meetings are, doesn't give out the minutes, and doesn't respond to phone calls?
I'm not sure exactly where Cynthia Matthews is on this. I know that her name did not come up in the meeting today. So it didn't appear, at least from today's meeting, it doesn't seem that she's taking a very high profile position. perhaps more so at HCRC, but...
So this meeting took about 2 hours?
I don't know. There was 3 o'clock in the room.
You got back around 7:15, I think?
And we left early.
No, 6:30, actually.
Yeah, they're still bickering.
What disputes were outstanding when you left?
Well, they had moved on past the merger, and they had were taking up some of the leftover business of, you know, the Homeless Garden Project separated officially today, April 1st, from CCH, and it's on its own. So there were some leftover financial concerns regarding a payment of an audit. And so there was some of that being hashed around and how to resolve it in a way that facilitates a good cooperation between CCH and Homeless Garden Project in a post-joined era.
Is the Homeless Garden Project still actually going on, or is it largely in limbo?
No, they have the site out at Swanton, or the Swenson property, I should say, out on Swanton Road. And there's also the tiny garden, the Women's Organic Flower Enterprise Garden, which is across from the Washington Street store site. So we have those two locations still occurring. And of course then, we've been hearing, of course, major negotiations with the Pogonet Master Plan to put up a homeless garden project around the clubhouse area of the Pogonip. But none of that came up at today's meeting. Peter Castleberg did arrive towards the end of the meeting.
What was the final decision regarding Karen Gillette?
That all the current concerns that we raised today and any other concerns that we have, that we articulate those in writing, send them to the committee, our merger subcommittee, that Karen then that those be directed to the merger subcommittee on HCRC for them to answer, so we can get some sort of response from them.
You can find out when they're meeting.
The mediator directed that we should have the next set of meetings should be fairly small. It should be our merger committee meeting and the HCRC merger committee meeting to work some of these differences. Some of them are very sensitive. There are some rumors about Karen Gillette that are very sensitive, and yet
drug use, perhaps.
Perhaps.
By the way, that's the one thing I would not hold against Karen Gillette would be using marijuana.
Oh, I don't think that I don't care what she does in her off time, you know. But I think for me personally, I'm concerned of what's being allowed. I don't know how much this is okay to say over the air. Me and my big mouth, you know. I mean,
well, your opinion. Your opinions are your own. I mean, if you're revealing somebody else's confidential discussion, that's
Well, my opinion is that I have witnessed drug dealing on the site, and I'm just concerned that if Community House is going to be a clean and sober operation, that that there at least I just don't think that she has a good history as far as what people are allowed to do on site. And, you know, maybe she wasn't aware that any of that was going on, or maybe she was turning her head to it. But I don't think that she has a good history as far as that goes, directing. But everything else, you know, maybe she's done a good job.
Anything else, Becky, that you can remember? For example, I know that there was concern that there would be some huge loss of federal monies if this merger happened. Has that concern been allayed?
Apparently they've worked out some sort of complicated process of keeping both 501c3 statuses, keeping separation but together. CP3O. Right. Yeah, apparently they felt that they had adequately addressed that, and that we would still be eligible for all those dollars that nonprofit status can garner. One final concern that I had, and I did not vote for the merger. I was one of the few who did not tentatively vote for the merger, and was asked, you know, why I didn't support. And I said, well, I really am sitting on the fence right now about this merger. And I said, at this point in time, I'm slightly opposed to it, and that is because I don't see that the stated purpose for the merger, which is to increase or improve our services to homeless people, I don't see how this merger is going to accomplish that in any way, shape, or form.
We haven't even talked about it. It hasn't even been discussed how we'll help homeless people.
Dick Wilson is the one who mentioned it when he came in and spoke at our meeting about, you know, that it would, but he didn't give any facts or reason. I haven't seen any evidence that it would improve services to homeless.
The real reason for the merger, well, I don't know what the real reason is. It's been bruited about that perhaps the real reason is Dick Wilson's nervousness to have CCH have so much control over or responsibility for the community house project after its somewhat questionable record in the last decade.
Oh, I suppose that could be it. My gut feeling about why this merger would be a good idea is sometimes HCRC and CCH are in the uncomfortable position of competing for the exact same dollars, and that there's competition between them. And if we were one agency, then that would, I suppose it would still occur, but it would work out internally.
That was strange. Well, thank you very much.
Byers says that the reason the city is so eager for us to merge is because there's two organizations that are both on the same property. And Becky actually pointed out that there's actually four organizations on the same property. So why is it that it would be so helpful for two of them to merge?